there are two main kinds of threats. One is, of course, hooliganism, and the second is terrorism.
Has reinstating border checks and passport control to stop hooligans, for instance, been a useful tactic?
Up till now, we noticed that I think a few hundred of notorious English hooligans have been stopped at the borders of Germany. So it does help. And it also sends a message to those who might come to Germany with somewhat bad intentions.
There must be a lot of groundwork in place right now to have stopped any of these groups collecting, getting together and actually forming.
But the first objective for the authorities and for the operational services has, of course, already been fulfilled, and that is to look for optimal intelligence. And I think that they have done a good job in acquiring the proper intelligence, and that they are pretty well aware of the possible threats of the corners of hooliganism and right-wing radicalism, which may be present in some groups of supporters.
I can imagine that even just a collective march or a group showing by a right-wing element would be a dreadful PR disaster for Germany.
Naturally, that is true what you are saying, and here we have one of the most difficult components of contemporary mass events, which is that you only need a minor incident put on worldwide television, and you will see that wonderful reputation you have built up over many days, many weeks, may be ruined from one moment to the other. So it is of great importance for the authorities in Germany to remain very sharp on all these sort of things. And there, once again, intelligence is the number one objective.
Arm in arm with World Cup security comes safety. In February, the German version of Choice magazine railed against the safety preparations of the World Cup stadiums. Dr. Keith Still from research and development firm Crowd Dynamics has seen the research and says there are different perceptions worldwide of what crowds do in a panic situation.
There were a number of concerns about width, available egress routes and evacuation onto the pitch. Some claims in the report indicated that it wouldn't have passed, say, UK standards. But, of course, each country sets its own standards and has its own set of recommendations.
So is there a consensus at all amongst crowd and stadia professionals of how people react under different emergency situations?
Well, it's an evolving art, the concept of behavioural-based safety. It's the work that we're involved in, is looking at how the human condition reacts under various normal and emergency situations. And, of course, we are faced with an unknown potential next threat, next attack. I mean, no one would have predicted the Twin Towers disasters, for example. And so, you know, the concept of trying to plan for the unexpected is a very difficult subject in its entirety.
That's a perfectly correct statement on the part of this expert. There is not a tremendous degree of consensus on all these sort of things. One of the most basic questions actually is whether you have to, when you are talking about crowd control, imagine a stampede on the entrance of a stadium or in the stadium itself. Then you have two notions which are concurring with each other. One is that the people will actually follow up the instructions of safety and security personnel in a very diligent way. The other notion is that people will, in such situations, find their own way, look for their own ways. For instance, go out of the stadium the same way they entered it, because they will look for the familiar routes to get away from the stampede.
Well, the biggest problem is initially communication, is how do you get the information to the crowd that you must leave the building, but leave in a particular direction? So directed egress, when you need to move the crowd away from a specific threat, those are the issues that are a significant challenge to the management team, is how do we sweep the ground from the potential threat and push people away from that threat. So if you were to just say set off the fire alarms and tell everybody to leave, some of them may be moving towards danger and be totally unaware of this. So part of the security process and planning, part of the design process, is always to look at how we might facilitate directed egress. This is moving people away from potential sources of threat. And not necessarily terrorism. We look at things such as a chemical fire in a nearby factory with a toxic plume potentially drifting towards a stadium. So there are a number of natural and unnatural events that, of course, need to think about how we facilitate the crowd movement.
What about live sites? And they're a fairly new aspect of large sporting events. Are they an issue to secure?
Absolutely, and you are hitting a very important point here. When we are counseling the public authorities and the private authorities in these sort of big events, we also always tell them not to fix their attention exclusively on the stadiums. We always tell them that they should put also a lot of effort in safe and secure arrangements outside the stadiums and also beyond the matches.
Large open public spaces, unless they are managed correctly, can have their own crowd problems. And obviously, as we saw in the Olympics in America a few years ago, they could in themselves become target for things like pipe bombs. So you need to consider any time when you've got a public gathering, the crowd safety, the crowd movement, communication systems, crowd management.
Usually there is a tendency to direct all attention and all energy exclusively on the stadiums at the day of the matches and at the hours the matches take place, while actually there are many risks involved in a big event when you have hundreds of thousands of people from outside your country within your cities. There are quite some risks involved, and that's a totally different angle from which you have to approach the safety and security in such a big event.
Is the cost of security and safety beginning to get beyond the reach of large event organisers?
The cost of security is a considerable outlay, and of course this has to be part of the process of planning for large major events, particularly in the dangerous times that we live in. We must consider the crowd itself to be a potential target, and therefore design appropriate security, management and evacuation processes and procedures. But all the projects that I've been involved in internationally, this is fundamental to the planning process. It's just something that never really gets reported on at the top level. Nobody really wants to see reports on how much was spent on security prior to the event, because you know, that's giving away the wrong type of information to the wrong type of people.
When you talk about the cost of these sort of events, I would say that you have always to make a cost-benefit analysis in the most comprehensive fashion you can. And what I mean by this is that you have to take into account the enormous importance in our Western, also in our Western societies, of the kind of events which are actually taking place. And these events have an enormous important, let me call them, socio-psychological function for society at large. They are actually reinforcing the collective identities of collective identity of the people who are gathering together in such mega events, and that may cost quite some dollars or Australian pounds. Well, that is all. I would say that's all in the game.
Speaking of games, how is Germany's scorecard so far with how they're running the World Cup?
I would say that they're doing fine at the moment. When you talk more specifically about a threat which you can't write off completely, it's of course terrorism. With regard to terrorism, we of course will keep their measures and their strategies as secret as possible. But with regard to hooliganism and the threat of right-wing radicalism, they are doing, I would say, pretty good. And they are, of course, helped at the moment by the extremely hot weather, which doesn't help people to become overactive at this moment.